Luke chapter 6 is full of what some would call hard sayings. There is Luke's summary of the Sermon on the Mount. You'll find the full version of the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew. But Jesus here in Luke chapter 6 points us in some life-changing directions with admonitions like begins in verse 24. Woe to you who are rich, for you've received your consolation. Woe to you who are full now, for you shall be hungry. Woe to you who laugh now, for you shall mourn and weep. Woe to you when all people shall speak well of you, for so their fathers did to the false prophets. Then he says, but I say to you, love your enemies, do good to those that hate you, and bless those who curse you, pray for those who abuse you. To one who strikes you on the cheek, offer the other also. And from one who takes away your cloak, do not withhold your tunic either. Verse 35, he said, but love your enemies and do good and lend, expecting nothing in return. Your reward will be great, and you will be sons of the Most High. In verse 40, he said, a disciple is not above his teacher, but everyone, when he is fully trained, will be like his teacher. Then we come to verses 46 through 49, from which our lesson text for this evening comes. Jesus said, why do you call me Lord, Lord, and do not do what I tell you? Everyone who comes to me and hears my words and does them, I will show you what he's like. He's like a man building a house who dug deep and laid the foundation on the rock. And when a flood arose, the stream broke against that house and could not shake it because it had been well built. But the one who hears and does not do them is like a man who built a house on the ground without a foundation. When the stream broke against it, immediately it fell, and the ruin of that house was great. You know, the Bible is actually a book of building. From the beginning to the end, it tells of the matter of building. In Genesis chapter 6, we find God's instruction to Noah to build a great boat in order to preserve humanity from the flood. And Hebrews chapter 11, verse 7 says that the building of that ark was done by faith. In Genesis chapter 11, it tells of man setting out to build a great structure that would reach to heaven, but it was not in accordance with God's will, and God foiled that plan. In Exodus chapter 20, God instructed the building of altars and gave certain requirements he had for those altars in order for them to be acceptable. And from that time forward, the building of altars was done God's way. In Exodus chapter 25, God gave Moses a pattern for the building of the tabernacle. There was no choice but to build it according to the way and the details that God had provided. In 1 Kings chapter 5, we find Solomon beginning to prepare to build the temple. And again, it was done in exactly the way with the materials and according to the plans that God had provided. In the books of Ezra and Nehemiah, we find God's people engaging in the rebuilding of the temple after it had been destroyed and erecting again the wall where it had been broken down around the city of Jerusalem. And again, these projects were completed only with God's help and blessings. In Matthew chapter 16, verse 18, Jesus promised to build his church. And he did so exactly as he had promised to do. In John chapter 14, in the opening verses of that chapter, Jesus implies that there is a magnificent building program that was going on in heaven. And he said, I go to prepare a place for you. a place prepared for all of the redeemed. You know, in view of all of those references and other references to the importance of building in the Bible, it should come as no surprise to us to learn that Jesus depicts every single one of us as builders. In a physical sense, I've always been somewhat of a builder. I've heard my dad tell of taking me with him to the hardware store when I was just a little bitty fella, and he would give me the choice of a dime's worth of nails or a dime for the Coca-Cola machine. Yeah, it was a long time ago. He says, I always took the nails because I was always hammering nails into something in the shop around the house. One of my favorite things to build as I was a kid, and admittedly, when I was a little older than a kid, was tree houses. Everywhere we lived, I built a tree house. I've left a string of tree houses from Cameroon, West Africa, to Montgomery, Alabama. And I could take you right now and show you one that you could spend the night in. But Jesus isn't talking about physical builders of houses or even tree houses. When he implies that we're all builders, he means spiritual builders. You and I, every one of us, engaged in a spiritual building project that right now at this very instant may or may not be going along very well. And if your project isn't going well right now, maybe we can discover the problem here this evening and bring about a solution. Life's realities have a way of interfering and complicating things. But nothing could be any more simple than this little parable that many of us as children sang about. The wise man built his house upon the rock. The foolish man built his house upon the sand. And so as we explore this text, I believe there are two questions that need to be answered. Question number one, if we are all builders, what are you building? In the parable that we read there in Luke chapter 6, it's also recorded at the end of Matthew chapter 7, both of those men were busy building houses. But you and I are busy building lives. What kind of life am I building? In every building project that I've ever been engaged in, there has been, either formally or informally, a materials list. A list of those things that you'll need in order to build this project. Every day, you and I are putting materials into this project of our lives. And these materials are making up this spiritual project that we're building. Let's go down the list. There are thoughts that are being put into this spiritual project. In Psalm 94, verse 11, the psalmist says, "The Lord knows the thoughts of man." And Proverbs chapter 6, verse 18 indicates that one of the things that God hates is a heart that devises wicked plans. If God isn't reading our hearts, and if God isn't examining our thoughts and our plans, then He wouldn't know when we had wicked plans, would He? You see what that means. The thoughts that we think are very private. I have no doubt that if we live long enough here on this earth, there will be some technological device invented that will literally be able to read people's minds and thoughts. Right now we struggle with the privacy of things like email. Think about the time when it comes when people will be able to read our minds, our thoughts. That holds some very interesting ramifications, but at the same time, from the standpoint of the child of God, there is no thought that is private from God. For God knows our hearts. He sees and reads every thought. Sometimes we get to thinking that the things that we think are only for our own selves, and we would be horrified if someone knew what we were thinking, and yet we forget that God knows what we're thinking. And those thoughts are going into this building project. Motives. The motives that we cherish are being built into our house. Now let me point out to you that the word motive is not in the Bible. But the concept is there in almost every page. The word motive means the cause or the reason why we do something if we do it. Our motive for doing it is our reason for doing it. What motivates us to do that? The Bible is very clear that we must have the right motives for the things that we do. In Luke chapter 12, we read about the man that God called a fool, a rich man. We talked about this man on the radio program this morning, and the fact is that in the day of Jesus, those people that he was talking to as he told this parable were of the notion that people who had riches were people that God was blessing. That surely there was something good about their lives, otherwise God would not bless them with all of those riches. And conversely, they also believed in that day that if a man was poor, impoverished, then that certainly meant that there was something wrong with what he was doing and that God was withholding blessings from him. Jesus was very clear that this man in Luke chapter 12 was lost. He was lost in spite of the fact that he was rich. He was lost because of his motives for doing it. He wasn't lost because he was rich. He was lost because he was selfish. He was lost because he was greedy. He was lost because he had no thought for heaven. But rather, he was laying up all of his treasure upon the earth. In Matthew chapter 25, Jesus tells several parables, and one of those involved the fellow we call the one-talent man. You remember, he was a man who was condemned by his master because he took the master's money, the one talent. And instead of using it in a productive way to produce more, he went and dug a hole and buried it. So that when his master came back, he returned the same thing to him. He was condemned for that. He was not condemned because he did not invest the money. He was condemned because he was afraid to use the money. He was fearful and unbelieving. His fear and laziness were his motives behind his behavior. The motives that lie behind what we do are going into this project. And one day when this project is finished, people may assemble in a place just like this. And it may be an occasion when your lifeless body lies in a casket sitting at the front. And someone will stand in a pulpit such as this. And they will attempt to speak comforting words to your family and your descendants. There will be the observation, either spoken or unspoken, in the minds of those who are assembled there. Observation of the project that you completed in your life here on this earth. that project that you and I are building right now with our thoughts and our motives and our words. The words that we speak are building material. I am literally amazed at the vocabulary of some who claim to be Christians, especially when they get away from the other members of the church. I'm not amazed at the breadth of their vocabulary, nor the technicality of their learning and education. I'm amazed at the low level that we sometimes sink to in our words that we speak. God's word is clear concerning the purity that should come from our lips, that no corrupt communication should proceed from our mouth, but we should speak those words which are good for the use of edifying, those things that we say in order to bring grace to those who hear. The words that we speak are materials in our project, along with the deeds that we're doing. The things that we're known for. Or it may even be the things that we do that no one else knows about. Those are also materials as we build this spiritual house, our aims, the goals that we pursue. Some set their sights fearfully low in this life. And even those very low goals and ideals become elements in their spiritual house. This house that you and I are building tells a great deal about us spiritually. Some of us are attempting to build only big fancy mansions that would be noticed by everyone who comes close to them. And if we're doing that, it's usually because we want to feel good about ourselves. We want to have the praise and the recognition from those around us. On the other hand, and maybe at the other extreme, there are some who are attempting to build a little, what we call a little Jim Walter home. Even though they could do much better, their spiritual house is just a small token of the abilities that they really have to produce something for the Lord. I'm convinced that there are even some who are attempting to build nothing more than just a tent in order that they can fold it up quickly and disappear whenever they come under strong scrutiny. We need to all assess our spiritual house. We need to take stock of the project that we're building. We need to take a careful measurement and see what is its real, true value. I said there are two questions we need to answer tonight, and the second one is this. And since we're all builders, what are we building on? In 1174, the year 1174 A.D., Italian architect Bonanno Pisano, poor guy, began work on what would quickly become his most famous project for not such a real good reason. The project was the freestanding bell tower for the cathedral of the city of Pisa. The tower was designated as a very important structure. It was to be built 185 feet tall, and it was well underway when the soil under the foundations of the tower began to give way, and that tower began to lean. At about the level of the third floor, Construction was halted for quite some time for a couple of different reasons. One, because everybody was trying to figure out what to do to straighten this building back up. Also, because of a great deal of warring and fighting that was going on between cities and communities and what we would call almost city-states today. But the construction of the tower resumed. And after 176 years, it was completed. During that 176 years, many different measures were attempted to compensate for the weak soil under the foundation. For 800 years now, it has continued to tilt. And now it's about 12 feet away from vertical. The floors are even constructed unevenly, much thicker on one side than the other, in an attempt to take away the effect of the leaning. And there are at least two different staircases in the building, originating from the same room or the same floor. And naturally, because they're on opposite sides of the building, they have a different number of steps in each one of them to arrive at the next floor. Jesus makes it abundantly clear that we need to be building on the foundation of obedience. In this parable in Luke chapter 6, and in fact when we look at Matthew's account of the same parable in Matthew chapter 7, verses 24 to 27, Matthew gives the same details with one exception. Matthew's account adds the words wise and foolish. Jesus said, "One who hears the words of Christ and obeys them is a wise man." He said, "One who hears the words of Christ and does not obey them is a foolish man." Now you'll notice this is not a comparison between two builders who set out to build on two different foundations from the very beginning. That was not their intention. Rather, this is a comparison between two builders, one of which gives careful consideration to the foundation upon which he builds, while the other builder had absolutely no concern whatsoever for the kind of foundation there was under his structure. The foolish builder didn't necessarily think that sand was a better foundation. He just simply gave no thought at all to the necessity of a good foundation. The end result of the work of those two men is abundantly clear. And there are also many parallels to this principle, and they are borne out in our lives constantly. We could apply this lesson to teenagers who are facing major decisions as they move into adulthood. Young people, almost daily, in fact, surely, daily, you must decide whether to take the slow but sure road of wholesome companions and honorable morals, or take the fast lane of worldliness, which promises instant gratification. You see, a good foundation takes time, and there is not a shortcut to righteousness. We could apply this same principle to the matter of choosing a mate for life. Shall I choose the exciting, the popular, the worldly person of questionable moral character with no principles? Or should I choose a person of inner beauty and character who just might not be the most fashionable and popular choice, but one who honors God in his or her body and life? This principle can be applied to raising children. Shall I take the worldly option of satisfying and gratifying them with every physical ease and comfort, keeping them entertained and busy while I'm fulfilling my own selfish aims? Or shall I take the more admittedly troublesome way of bringing them up in the nurture and the admonition of the Lord, even though it'll involve some time and effort and a great deal of sacrifice on my part as a parent? You see, the foundation we build on is so very critical. It made the difference in the success and the failure of the two men building there in Luke 6 and Matthew 7. The choice of a foundation makes all the difference in the world as a young person grows to become an adult and makes the decisions that have to be made along the way, decisions that perhaps have always been made for them in the past, but that one day will have to be made by them individually. The matter of the foundation is so very important in choosing a mate for life. Certainly, there could be no better illustration of the need to build on the solid foundation than to examine the divorce rate that is so common in our culture today. And in raising our children, the foundation of godliness, proper parental instruction, the foundation we build on is critical. What shall it be? Jesus indicates there are only two options: rock or sand, obedience or disregard. Remember, you can't call him Lord if you aren't willing to do what he says. My hope is built on nothing less than Jesus' blood and righteousness. I dare not trust the sweetest frame, but wholly lean on Jesus' name. His oath, His covenant, His blood support me in the whelming flood. When all around my soul gives way, He then is all my hope and stay. When He shall come with trumpet sound, oh, may I then in Him be found, dressed in His righteousness alone, faultless to stand before the throne. On Christ the solid rock I stand. All other ground is sinking sand. All other ground is sinking sand. How's your project coming? What are you building on?